Phone the comment line 1850 715 900.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Now, over the last few days, anti-water protests have turned from peaceful demonstrations to much more tense, violent, even dangerous encounters between politicians, protesters and Gardaí. I'm joined now by security analyst Tom Clonan. Tom, thank you for coming into us this morning. You've a background in this area. You've done training in this area. You've been analysing hours of footage on YouTube of what has been happening. What is your take on how it has been managed so far?
Well, just so the listeners know, as an army officer, as a captain in the Defence Forces, prior to the ceasefires, we provided aid to the civil power support to an Garda Síochána. So we did what we called riot control or public order training, exactly the same as an Garda Síochána. Because when we are in the same place, whether it be a prison riot, whether it be like in Portlaoise, for example, or whether we were supporting the guards in extraditions, were very, very nasty, very, very confrontational. We had exactly the same reference points as our colleagues in Garda Síochána with regard to the use of force, justification and minimum force. So, you know, I've been watching the water protests with great interest, and particularly after the events of the weekend, where I have to say members of cabinet have been using language that is very inappropriate. They have been using hyperbole to describe what have been relatively minor, albeit unacceptable, incidents. But they need to be very careful not
What do you mean, Tom, exactly? Like, be clear.
Well, you know, they have, I saw the footage of what had happened to Minister Burton, and I saw the pictures of, you know, water balloons hitting her head, and that's absolutely unacceptable. And Paul Murphy and others who are involved in those protests, they need to make sure that they're properly stewarded and that they're conducted responsibly. And in fairness to Minister Burton, you know, she...
Paul Murphy would say he didn't organise
that. Oh, absolutely.
That
I understand that. But he was there. He was there with a megaphone. You know, please use it. I mean, if I... anyway, look, but the government response has been, you know, one a kind of a confrontational, adversarial use of language to describe protesters. You know, they constantly refer to sinister elements amongst those who are out on the streets. You know, there were 150,000 out in the streets. We'll probably have a similar number. In fact, we'll probably have more than that on the 10th of December. When I heard Brendan Howland say this morning that we could be proud of Irish water, you know, they're really missing the point here. People are
angry. I suppose it remains to be seen, though, Tom. We haven't heard the full proposals yet. I mean, yeah, it may well be that this
well,
calms at
you know,
this point.
They may try to rearrange the deck chairs on the deck of the Titanic, but people aren't, I mean, the government are correct when they say that people aren't necessarily protesting about water, but the installation of water meters gives people the opportunity to protest. But anyway, look, that's...
Yeah, let's get back to the security. When you talk about a violent confrontation, or if you find yourself in a position where there is, you know, public disorder or unrest or riot, whatever you're going to call it, what are the basic requirements, the legal requirements? So, what are you allowed to do?
Okay, so there are four basic principles. I'll give you a very quick masterclass, if you like, and people can then look at images and decide for themselves what it is they're looking at. This is like the rules of rugby or the rules of Gaelic football. They're very simple. First of all, in terms of legal requirements, that's the first principle, and it's a catch-all. For example, guards have to be properly trained in public order. In the army, the riot platoon, they must have had their updated training, and they must have trained together in order for their performance as a public order unit is coherent and cohesive. And it is preferable if guards are from the same station, from the same unit, that they know each other and that they can, you know, if you like, operate cohesively.
That it's a team effort when you go out. There's no good one.
I mean, the idea that you would, you know, respond reactively to a flashpoint and go to a, you know, four or five Garda stations in the DMR and say, right, get your riot gear on and be at such and such a place at such and such a time. You know, that really isn't ideal. Now, that's not the fault of an Garda Síochána. That's an issue that flows from austerity and lack of investment and overtime and all of those things.
And I suppose, in fairness, we don't have a great culture of having to deal with street protests.
Well, the guards have been very successful. You know, if you look back at the 2004 accession ceremonies for new EU member states, we had the riots in Lansdowne in 1995. We had the Love Ulster riot in 2006. By European Union standards, the guards are actually very good. I mean, they tend to have a good relationship with the public, and we haven't had, if you like, deaths on the street, you know, inadvertently by, you know, by way of head injuries and other issues. And these are things that happen quite commonly in the continent. So the guards have a lot of experience in this regard. But unfortunately, they've been hollowed out through austerity and cuts in the last while. But other legal requirements would be, for example, you know, you can't improvise a weapon. If somebody throws a missile at a guard, you know, you can't turn around and pick it up and throw it back. That kind of stuff. You know, you can't use unauthorised or improvised weapons to attack people. So that's the kind of general legal requirement.
So it's defensive rather than in any way
So the guard
aggressive.
must be on duty, must be rostered for duty, must have the proper equipment and must be properly trained and instructed in how to use that. The second thing then is prevention. All force must be to prevent you know, a threat on life or injury or damage to public property or public order, what have you. It cannot be punitive. So in other words, if I throw a bottle of water at Enda Kenny and a guard sees me, you know, he can't come up then and, you know, hit me with the baton and say, don't do that again, because that's punitive. It's not preventative.
He can arrest you maybe for doing it,
but we're talking about the use of force as opposed to arrest. Again, the other issue then is justification. There must be a reason to use force. You can't use force to make a statement or to go in hard on protesters. There must be an objective, defensible reason for using force. And that is, you know, a threat to your own life, the lives of others, a threat to injury of yourself or others, to prevent yourself from being forcibly disarmed. And anybody, and I read it in independent newspapers, that a security source, inverted commas, close to government, said that they were considering arming guards to, you know, to have them with firearms. And that is a basic principle of public order. You do not mix firearms with public order.
You're asking for trouble there.
And that is a basic... whoever said that really is being reckless and irresponsible.
Were they talking about equipping people with firearms simply to protect ministers? It wasn't. I didn't read it as necessarily in public order situations.
Yeah, but you must not put firearms into a situation where a public order incident is likely. I mean, it's just, it is the wrong thing to do, because what you're doing is you're putting the person with the firearm at risk, because, you know, how do they prevent themselves from being forcibly disarmed? They must shoot. So it is an immediate and sinister, it's a sinister escalation. But let me just on the use, on justification, so damage to property and so on. And here's the most important one, levels of force. And this is the last principle. The first one is unarmed restraint by weight of numbers. In other words, guards may link arms, move forward, you know, brace against protesters, push, you know, make them move back. If somebody is behaving, if somebody is perpetrating an assault on a guard, then two or three guardie can get them into a hold position, what they call a come-along hold and so on. But you are not permitted to kick or punch or swing somebody around like a rag doll and bash them into street furniture. That is not consistent with the concept of minimum force. The next level of force, if unarmed restraint by weight of numbers is not sufficient, then you can resort to the use of batons or pepper spray or other non-lethal weapons. But there must be an objective, justifiable reason for that. Now, in the riot platoon or the riot company, you have what's known as a platoon diarist, who films everything, keeps a record of everything, and you learn from that. On Garda Síochána do the same thing. But what I've seen, Keelan, on the footage from the water protests, you know, the ones that spring up around places in Dublin and Cork and elsewhere, the guards are not there in sufficient numbers. And the behaviour of some of the protesters is very, very provocative. I mean, they're going right up to members of An Garda Síochána, men and women. They're screaming in their faces. They're using language. They're using the F word, the C word. They're questioning the parenthood of Gardaí. They're trying to... I mean, it is absolutely not a legitimate form of protest to do that.
So stewardship is essential for the protesters.
But if I could say this, though, The Gardaí should not be put into that position, because the Gardaí are there to serve the community. And you talk to any of those Gardaí in the front line, they do not want to be in open confrontation with members of the community that they police. But they have been put there in order to protect the installation of meters, which we hear this morning are now no longer necessary.
Tom, just to go back to the force, I mean, you've been in these types of situations. You know, when you say that all of these regulations are in place, when you're a guard or an army officer or whatever in a riot situation, is there somebody in your ear who's making the decisions as to when you can up the level of force, or what justification has been provided by the behaviour? Or is it down to each individual guard how they behave?
Well, unfortunately, when you wear a uniform, you don't have any extra powers, you know, aside from other members of the public, but you do have extra responsibilities. So each and every guard is responsible for his or her actions. At leadership level, whether it's an inspector or a sergeant or a superintendent on the ground, in the unlikely event that you might have a superintendent there, then the inspector or the sergeant is responsible for everything that happens or fails to happen in a given situation. Now, in around Leinster House and in its environs, you have a complement of Gardaí who are there, you know, on government buildings duty and so on, and they have a chain of command there. They're kind of configured or prepared, you know, they have prior notice under the law of protests and demonstrations. So generally speaking, they're properly prepared for it, they're trained for it,
they're
fully briefed, they have a plan. But it's Gardaí who are out in housing estates, you know, who are called to, you know, protect, how would you say, the, you know, to be guardians of the peace as is part of their definition. Mm. You know, they're vulnerable because from what I've seen on the footage that's on YouTube, and there's hours of it, they're not there in sufficient numbers. They're being placed in an invidious position. Look, if you look at where Gardaí are involved in other areas, you know, cash escorts and so on with the army, the banks make a contribution towards that security. If guards are required in large numbers for music concerts, like the famous Garth Brooks situation, or at GAA matches, contributions are made towards the cost of that policing. Who is paying on Garda Síochána? Who's paying the taxpayer for this, what I would consider to be a waste of resources? Because the meters themselves now, by virtue of the statements the government have made, are they're like e-voting machines. They don't make any sense whatsoever. But
I suppose people will still know how much water they're using,
yeah, but
and
in
knowing
a broader security sense, Keelan, something, I mean, your previous contributors here, Jerry Helen and others, 10%, only 30% of the people turned out in Dublin by Dublin West by-election to vote. So Paul Murphy was elected by, you know, 1 in 10 of the people who live there. There's a serious disconnect between Leinster House and the general public. And there's huge anger out there. And again, I say to you, the water meters, you know, Enda Kenny is right when he says this isn't about water, but the water meters have given people a focal point, an opportunity to get out there and protest and express their anger over everything that's happened to us in the last 10 years. Now, if you think strategically and if you use a bit of common sense, they should stop installing water meters now. Take the heat out of it. Allow people to march peacefully. And, you know, I would say to people listening to this, you know, the Gardaí are our brothers and sisters in austerity. If they've taken the same pay cuts as the rest of us, they have to pay the charges and the USC and all of the other things to bail out banks. They deserve to be respected in their place of work, which is our streets. Mm. At the same time, I would say to Garda management, have a look at the footage, because if I can see it, they can see it. You know, there is a requirement for training, a requirement for cool heads, because, Keelan, if somebody falls over and hits their head, once you have blood in the street, if a guard gets hit in the head by a rock and you have blood, then it goes out of control and we could have a very, very sad and sorry situation on our hands.
Okay.
And the government really need to stop using adversarial, confrontational, condescending, patronising language, you know, commenting on mobile phones and that sort of stuff. Not helpful.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Tom, thank you for that. I suppose you would point out with Paul Murphy, may have been 1 in 10. It's very much a democratic mandate he has.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know I'll be there on the 10th of December, but, you know, people need to behave responsibly, but not just members of the public, but also our political leaders.
All right. Listen, Tom Clonan, thank you very much indeed.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.